This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome back to the WOMED fam. This week, I'm speaking with Mackenzie Kimes, soon to be known as the Patient RN. And I mean soon because, you know, I hope you'll go and follow her, and that is her handle. Mackenzie and I break down her journey on both sides of the bed as patient and nursing provider. She's also a teacher. Man, she does it all. Her story is at times very shocking, but also very moving. Y'all, she is a badass, and she actually used to ice skate competitively. So keep that in mind when you start listening to her journey and the things that she's overcome. It's a really cool story. Also, don't forget to check out Patreon when you get a chance. It's patreon.com/thewomed. On there, you can get access to ad-free episodes and even live Q&A sessions with moi. All right, peeps, time for that NDE. Shannon is bringing us the Nurse D energy this week. She writes in, I graduated nursing school in June of 2020. That is a rough time to try and graduate. And passed my Netflix in Netflix, passed my Netflix, and passed my NCLEX in August. I was getting very frustrated because I was struggling to find a job in the midst of the pandemic. Hospitals in my area didn't seem to want to hire and train new grads. I was feeling really demoralized and scared I would never be able to work as a nurse. I kicked my butt into gear, overhauled my resume, and started applying like crazy. Well, finally, on March 16th, I had my first day of work as a nurse. I will be working as an outpatient dialysis RN and couldn't be more excited to start my nursing career. I love these NDE moments. They make me so happy. Shannon, congratulations. And I just want everyone to wish her good luck in starting out her new career. I messaged you this, but you're going to get so much good work experience in that field. So proud of you, excited for you. Now let's dig into the episode. Well, why don't we give people a little bit of backstory? You are a nurse, correct?
Yes.
How long have you been a nurse? How long have you been practicing?
So I will have been a nurse for 7 years this July. So awesome. Just under 7 years. My background is mainly in pediatrics. I am a certified pediatric nurse. So my story really comes from, and my passion for nursing really comes from my own personal experiences. Mm-hmm. I decided that I wanted to go into nursing like in high school and things like that. I didn't really have a clue as to what I wanted to do. I actually was a national level figure skater up through college. And
what?
So, yes.
That's and so, amazing.
Thank you. So I was training like 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, traveling nationally, internationally for competitions. So mm-hmm. that was like my huge focus in life at that point was to train and to compete and kind of work my way up the rankings in figure skating.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where my mind was. And then that's kind of when all of my health struggles started to begin was when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I had been having some pain, some GI issues. I was getting abdominal pain every time I was eating. And I kept going back to the pediatrician. He's like, oh, intestinal virus. Like it sometimes takes a while to pass. Like I think everything is okay, but just keep going, you'll be okay. And it just kept nagging and nagging and it wasn't getting any better. And as an athlete, I mean, I was training 6 hours a day. So when I wasn't able to eat, it was really affecting my training.
When you have to eat to keep up the calories alone that you were.
Oh, for sure. Yes, exactly. And so it was just affecting so many areas of my life. And ironically, I was in Florida on vacation with my family when my pain just got like unbearable. I could barely stand up straight. And my parents were like, we've had enough of this. We're going to go to the closest ER. And mm-hmm. so they took me there, and it actually was kind of like a small community hospital. And mm-hmm. so they're like, okay, we'll do some imaging, things like that. And they ended up doing a CT scan, and they came back, and you could just tell that something was not right. And they were like, we need to do some further testing. We saw something concerning on your scan, but we don't want to jump to conclusions. So we just have some more testing that we need to do. And so they ended up doing an ultrasound. And I just remember looking at the ultrasound tech's face during this, and she just kept getting like closer and closer to the screen. And I was like, there's something not right. And I felt so scared and so afraid at the time, because they weren't really being very vocal about what was going on. So I was just kind mm-hmm. of sitting and waiting. And after they kind of got all of the testing done, they came in and kind of sat me and my parents down, and they were like, so we are just like a small community hospital, and based off of what we see on the scans, you have a 2-liter mass of blood in your abdomen, and we don't really know where it's like what caused it or why it's there, mm-hmm. but we are not equipped to treat you here. So we need to transfer you. And at the time, they knew that the mass was related to my female tract system, but they just didn't really know what was causing it. And so it took a long time for a hospital to accept me, because on one hand, I was only 15 at the time. So I was technically a pediatric patient, but was having a very non-pediatric problem. But then the adult hospitals wouldn't accept me because I was only 15. And so it took a long time to kind of even just get a hospital to accept me. And so they ended up taking me to the closest teaching hospital. There was pediatric floors located within an adult hospital. So it was like the perfect fit, because I was able to kind of see both sides of things. Mm-hmm. And so when I went there, more scans, things like that, and was seeing all sorts of specialists, and they came to the conclusion that I had what is called uterus didelphys. And so essentially,
I've honestly never heard of that.
Yes, it's pretty rare. And uterine anomalies are not super rare in women, but mm-hmm. my form of the anomaly is very rare. And so essentially how they explained it to me was, when you are a fetus and you're developing, females start with 2 separate female tracts, and then they're supposed to fuse together. So mine never actually fused. It stayed in 2 separate tracks. And on my one side...
Do you mean like your uterus never fully fused together, or...
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I had 2 uteri, technically, mm-hmm. and 2 cervices and 2 internal vaginal canals. So...
Wow.
Yes. And the problem was, on the right side, I had a complete septum. Mm-hmm. So when I had started menstruating like 2 years prior to that, when I would bleed, the blood had nowhere to flow out because the septum was blocking it. And so it just filled my right, technically my right uterus, just completely mm-hmm. filled up with old blood. And when it kind of ran out of room to keep expanding, the blood was just pouring into my abdomen, out tubes. Mm-hmm. So yes, it was very shocking. As a 15-year-old, again, I was not really in the mindset of, I was pretty much just thinking about the moment. And I was like, oh my gosh, how long am I going to be off the ice for? Is pretty much all I was concerned about. But my parents obviously were like, what does this mean? Was this going to mean for her future? Is she going to mm-hmm. be able to have children? Like, all sorts of things were kind of running through their minds. And at the time, I just was focused on one thing and was just training as an athlete. Yeah. And so it was definitely a shock. And I mean, being on vacation, we definitely did not anticipate this happening. Yeah. And so we were far away from home. I grew up in the Midwest. So we were coming down from Chicago. So we definitely mm-hmm. were not expecting all of this to happen. But
no.
I was, it was an emergency situation that they needed to fix. And so we pretty much just like stayed put, and they obviously needed to repair it surgically. Mm-hmm. And going into that procedure, it was a lot of what ifs. And I remember them going through like the consent with me and my mom and just kind of being like, we don't really know exactly what we're going to find. This is what we think we're going to find, but we could have to do this. We could have to do this. We could have to do this. And just kind of went down all of these what if scenarios. So going into the procedure, I was really nervous because they didn't really have a whole lot of concrete things to tell me. So It was definitely hard going through that and going into surgery. But I went into the procedure and the procedure ended up taking close to 10 hours to perform.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They tried to preserve as much of my right side as they could because knowing that I was only 15, they wanted to increase the chances that it would be a functioning uterus and a, just kind of set me up for the future of if I wanted to have children and things like that. So I spent about almost 3 weeks in the hospital kind of recovering from that procedure. Luckily, we had a place to stay down there. So my mom and I just kind of camped out there for about 2 months while I recovered. And then we ended up going back to Chicago, which is where I grew up. And I was still just not feeling well. I still was having pain. I still just was overall not doing well. And so we wanted to seek out a second opinion. And so my mom, she's like the expert at trying to find me the best of the best to try to go and see. And so, and at the time, I mean, she was a huge advocate for me. And we found a world-renowned surgeon that kind of specializes in these things in Milwaukee. And so
was it at like Frederick or Children's Hospital up there?
It was through Columbia St. Mary's.
Oh, okay. I'm from Wisconsin.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And funny story, kind of sidetracking, I graduated from Marquette University. So I know Milwaukee very well and did all of my clinicals at Children's of Wisconsin and things like that. So I went and saw the surgeon and she was very different than what I had kind of experienced with my other doctor. She was very cut and dry. She was very straight to the point. She said, I need to go in and fix things. There's something obviously still going on. So, but didn't seem very phased by it. She's like, I see rare things all the time. So it's okay. I'll go in and fix it. So she was very confident going in, which was very different than the surgeons that I had seen previously. And so I felt a lot more comfortable going in as a patient because she seemed like she knew what she was doing and she was very confident in it. So she anticipated that my surgery was going to last about 2 to 3 hours and it ended up lasting about 11. So,
oh my God, you poor thing. That is so wild.
Yeah, so it was definitely a long journey. I mean, I don't remember any of it. I just feel, I feel more for my parents who had to sit there for 11 hours waiting for me to come out.
Yeah, so, when we hear updates and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I just think that kind of looking back on the experience, like I just am so thankful that I had such a good support system. And I wish that I could have like, I don't know, supported them during that process because I mean, it was just so, it was unexpected. It was very, I don't know, it just didn't go the way that we had planned. And that's kind of the theme with a lot of the things that I have had going on.
Yeah.
Is I never follow the course that the doctors have thought that I was going to follow with that procedure. The surgeon came out and was like, I don't really know how you were even walking around with how things looked, much less training as an athlete at the time. And so it definitely kind of like put things into perspective of how serious everything looked. Luckily, she was able to do a full, well, it's technically called a hemihysterectomy. And so she completely removed my right side and was able to remove all of the endometriosis that I had kind of had just throughout my entire abdominal cavity from all of the bleeding. And so she was able to fix that. And I was like, great, this is awesome. I'm on the road to recovery. Yeah. So yeah, it had already been such a long journey. And so I was like ready to just kind of start healing and kind of get back on track. But after that, I was still having some issues, GI stuff, abdominal pain. And so she's like, I swear I fixed everything that I possibly could. I think that you need to seek out a GI specialist and see if there's anything that they kind of see going on. You could potentially have two problems going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so then I started seeing some GI specialists. They were running a whole bunch of tests. Everything was coming back pretty normal. There was really nothing crazy that they saw. And then I was scheduled to go in for another test, a barium study. And mm-hmm. I was planning on just going in for it and then going home and waiting for the results like I had prior. Yeah. But I went in for my test and essentially the doctor, while I was in the test and they were doing the imaging, told me that I was essentially, he was going to have to call the surgeon to tell them what was going on because I was going to have to be pretty much emergently sent to surgery with what they were seeing. And so, again, very scary moment for a 15-year-old mm-hmm. to be kind of in a test thinking that it's going to be kind of routine. Mm-hmm. And it kind of taking a turn was pretty much rushed to surgery because I had two sigmoid volvulus. So essentially my intestines were completely twisting on mm-hmm. itself and was to the point where it could potentially become necrotic. Mm-hmm. So they ended up taking me to the OR and removing 2 feet of my large intestine. So again, it was, yes. It was a very long road and it was really tough. And again, this was something I thought was going to be routine. And I came out mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, definitely not routine.
Hold up. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And now back to the show. Did you ever spend any time in the NICU as a baby? Like, did you have any issues at birth? Because like I'm just knowing like the different things that you're having, like midline defects like that, usually are more consistent with like a like some sort of Vactoral like type syndrome. And mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if you just yours were all just so mild, you know, not that I'm trying to diagnose you here or anything, definitely. But like I'm just like I'm wondering if like yours were just so mild that like they just weren't caught, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I was born at 32 weeks. So I okay. was born early, but really didn't have significant issues. It was more, I just kind of had to stay until I met the weight requirement to right. go home. And feed so, mm-hmm, yep, definitely.
Okay.
But one thing that they did notice when I was born was that I was born with a solitary kidney. Mm. So,
yeah.
Yes.
This is all making sense.
Yep. And so just like you were saying, they kind of were starting to put the pieces together because along with my solitary kidney and with my uterine anomaly, mm-hmm. A large percentage of women who have a uterine anomaly also only have one kidney. Mm-hmm. And so it all kind of started making sense and they were kind of able to at least piece things together.
Yeah.
But I have never gotten like an official like diagnosis of mm-hmm. anything. And I mean, I have seen dozens and dozens of doctors. I've been through to see geneticists, all sorts of things. And I think that one thing that I've really struggled with as a patient is that when I present in the doctor's office or whoever I'm seeing, they look at me and they're like, oh, well, you look fine.
Yeah.
And so I have had...
You're strong. You're an athlete. You can do all yes. this stuff. And, but you have all this pain, but you're able to power through it. So my guess is they would be like, is it really that bad? Like,
yes, exactly. And so that was something that I was really struggling with because being an athlete, I think that that mentality just really carried over into other parts of my life. And I was just so used to kind of like pushing through and that's just kind of how I was with everything else that was going on. And so I just really faced a lot of struggles with trying to communicate with doctors, like what was going on and how much it was affecting my life. And that is something that I've really like learned through this whole journey, and something that I have also really incorporated into my nursing practice, is like patients, they are the only ones that truly know what's going on in their body. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times, if you don't look sick or you don't present in a certain way, sometimes you don't get taken seriously and your symptoms don't get taken seriously and they're dismissed. And so that is something that I've really tried to incorporate into my nursing practice and kind of teach other new nurses and teach students that I work with in the clinical mm-hmm. setting. Like, if you have a patient who is complaining about something, like you need to take that information and really take it to heart, because nobody wants to have these problems. I mean, I was 15 and was talking about having two cervix. Like, it's yeah. not something that you want to vocalize and you want to talk about. And mm-hmm. so it was just, that was a point that was very frustrating for me. And I mean, even since then, I've had numerous other health issues that they've really never been able to fully diagnose. And so I've just been seeing a lot of doctors over the years. But again, I'm able to go to work. I'm able to do my job well. I'm able to function in my everyday life. I'm able to exercise and do all of those things. And so then when I show up there and try to explain to them like that I'm having these debilitating symptoms at mm-hmm. times that I just have learned to kind of fight through, I've gotten numerous times from doctors the like, well, we didn't see anything like on your scans or in your lab work, but like slide the business card of the psychologist to me and just be like, we think that you just really need to talk to someone. And we think that some of your symptoms like might be in your head.
Mm.
So
like you've become like a hypochondriac or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, from my past surgical history and just things that I have had diagnosed, like
mm-hmm.
I've proven that I've had some pretty major things going on when
they're
like, oh, intestinal virus for 3 months. And I had a 2-liter mass of blood in my abdomen. And so that is something that I just feel like is so hard to go through as a patient, because the words of somebody telling you that they think it's all in your head is almost more painful than the physical mm-hmm. symptoms that I have experienced in my life. And that has been something that I've really struggled with over the years, with trying to deal with new doctors and new practitioners. Mm-hmm. And so that is something that I felt like I just really want to try to help people learn how to advocate for themselves, and patients to learn to advocate for themselves, because mm-hmm. they are going to sometimes encounter people who might not be taking their symptoms as seriously as they need to. And so I just want to be that person to try to help them learn how to say those words that kind of help the doctor's ears perk up, or learn how to just articulate what they're feeling so mm-hmm. that all of it can get portrayed in the right picture so they can get what they need.
I'm still trying to process you saying that they think the symptoms are in your head.
Yes.
And that's not to say that, you know, that like for some people, you know, some people they are, you know, mm-hmm. but like when you look at your history, and like doctors not really taking that into account, that there like could be something else going on, and just being like, oh, this, we got another crazy patient, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't help anyone, you know, that's
definitely
it almost like reverse stigmatizes, you know, mental health in a way.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm saying that
no, right. I definitely understand what you're trying to say about that, like, oh, we're gonna mm-hmm. use this like psychologist to kind of cover up with what you're saying, and just so you'll kind of move along and like we're kind of done with you type of thing, and mm-hmm. pushing like, oh, go see a therapist on me, when not therapy is an amazing tool and I feel like everyone should use it, but in the right circumstances.
I had a similar situation happen with my dad this year. So he was starting to have like these horrible, painful, like abdominal attacks. And they're like, oh, it's ulcers. Oh, it's this. And then I'm like, Dad, you know, like, I don't know. It really sounds like it could be something with your gallbladder, you know, because it was always after you'd eat, always after you'd have like something fatty. And, you know, they just kept pushing it off, pushing it off. And then they prescribed him an anti-anxiety medication. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he's been like doubled up over in pain. And then finally he got in for like the right testing. And, you know, he had sludge backed up in his gallbladder. He had ended up having like a stricture in his duodenum as well that was causing a lot of issues. And they were able to like, you know, take care of it and fix it. But, you know, it's like, are doctors that scared of someone else's pain that mm-hmm. they're like, that they don't want to treat it, or that they're like, oh, like no one, clearly like they're making this up or something, or we can't find like the right like cause mm-hmm. of this discomfort for someone. And
I think that something that is really frustrating about our healthcare system is mm-hmm. these days, everything has become so specialized. And this is something that as a patient, I have become super frustrated with, because it's like, okay, I'm seeing a specialist for one problem. They kind of do a workup and they're like, well, I don't see anything. Sorry, can't help you. Here, go see this other specialist. And kind of showing with my history and all of the things that I have that actually do have like an underlying connection, I have struggled to find a doctor to look at me in a holistic way and kind of look big picture. And that is something that I'm really trying to find. And I've been trying to find it for many years and have not really had a lot of success. But I think that that kind of speaks to how our healthcare system is operating these days. Is it's so people get trained in their specialty. And if it's outside of their specialty, they're like, well, sorry, I can't help you. Go see this other person.
And then you have to wait until like that other specialty can see you. And yes. It just continues to delay care. And I feel for you. That's very frustrating. Just a sec, guys. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right. And we're back. Did you ever seek any sort of any therapy or mental health I would imagine being an athlete, being in like training and having your whole life like put on hold and kind of, you know, derailed would make anyone just like depressed or, you know, confused and just like need an outlet, need someone to talk to. Have you like sought any sort of like mental health, like therapy and stuff for that?
So, I have not gone to a therapist like long term, but I have had different points where I've kind of talked to people. I also have an amazing support system. My mom has been my rock through all of this. She has obviously been there since day one, and she is the person that has taught me how to advocate for myself. Because during all of this, I was only 15, 16 years old. I was still a child, and trying to communicate with doctors, I felt like they kind of dismissed me because I was technically a pediatric patient. And so my mom was the one really trying to advocate for me at the time and really trying to speak up. And I know that it was a struggle for her to get people to listen during this time. Her and I had a great relationship to where I felt like I could really vent to her. And so she was a huge support system. And my younger sister as well, she also was a huge, huge support through all of this. And as I've kind of gone through this whole process, I've just learned how to find like my people. And luckily they've been super supportive through it. But I do feel like now as I'm getting older and some recent things that have just kind of been building up with me health-wise and just kind of how situations have been handled with my care the last year, I feel like I've definitely been more open to being like, I should maybe like talk to someone who I can kind of help like sort things out and kind of let some of the frustration that I've been feeling out and have someone kind of teach me how to kind of navigate the feelings that I'm having.
Yeah.
But I think that therapy is a very, very great thing for people to use. And I'm a huge proponent of it. But I do feel like at the start of this, I was kind of turned off by it because the doctors were dismissing my symptoms and kind of pushing it on me. And so I do feel like I had a period of time where I kind of struggled with that because I was kind of like off put by the thought of going to one, because I was like, okay, well, if I go to one, I feel like I'm admitting that I don't have these problems anymore and that like I'm not having those physical symptoms that I was talking to them about, because it's kind of like I'm surrendering to it. And so I think that now I've matured a little bit. I can definitely see the other side of things in regards to seeking help from like a professional therapist.
Yeah. I mean, your body's just been through a lot of trauma.
Yes.
And that will manifest in different ways for everybody, you know?
Definitely.
Girl, you've been through it. So.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I mean, my first experience with therapy was awful too. You know, it was after my fiance had died and I was talking to this therapist and he was like, well, you know, these are the stages of Kubler-Ross and this is where you're at. I'm like, motherfucker, like, yeah, I went to nursing school too. I fucking know Kubler-Ross. Like, you weren't helping me. And so it wasn't until, you know, I like really started being more self-aware of, you know, what I was actually feeling and feeling how it was manifesting in my body, you know, with like different like panic attacks and stuff like that, that I was like, no, I need someone else. Mm-hmm. Well, and like for me too, it was like, I had a great support system too, but I was like, oh my God, are people getting tired of hearing about my problems too?
Definitely.
Like, I didn't want to stress other people out, you know, and
definitely
that's another thing that just led me to being like, okay, no, I need someone to teach me how to have, you know, I didn't know exactly what boundaries were, you know, but I needed, I just needed someone to like validate me, you know?
Definitely. And I think that the validation piece is huge. Mm-hmm. I recently was able to find a GI specialist out where I'm currently living. Mm-hmm. And I walked into her office. I had my like 4-inch medical binder of all my history ready to go, flopped it on the table. And she was like, all right, I'm going to turn on my recorder and I want you to literally start from day one and I'm going to be quiet. And I just want you to tell me your story. And that was literally the first time that I had ever had a physician do that with me. And I sat there for almost 2 hours just telling her what I had been through. And at the end of it, she just kind of like sat in silence for a second. And she was like, wow, you have really been through a lot. Mm-hmm. And that sucks. And it honestly was the most like, I don't know, going through that journey and kind of walking through all the tough times that I had had. And then having her say that, it just, I was like, no one has ever just acknowledged that in all of the physicians and all of the practitioners that I have seen. No one has ever said that to me. And it just like, I never realized it until she actually said it and realized how important that is for healthcare providers to acknowledge and validate what the patients are going through and what the families are going through. Because I feel like we, in our healthcare system, it's just like go, go, go constantly. And it's just
turn over new patients, do the test, figure out what the problem is. There's no like humanity.
Yes. And I left that appointment. I was like, oh my gosh, like I feel so thankful that I finally found a doctor who is willing to validate what I've been through and just take it one day at a time with me and essentially tell me like, okay, we're not going to give up on this until we figure out what's going on. And so it was like a really big turning point in like my kind of like my mental well-being with things, yeah. my attitude towards things. And it just really showed me that there are lots of great practitioners out there that are willing to do that. And mm-hmm. so it was a really great experience for me as a patient to have something validated by my like healthcare team.
That's so, so important. And I will say, like, that feeling, that's like, well, if you find the right therapist, that's mm-hmm. like a feeling you get,
mm-hmm.
you know, just of like being able to breathe and be like, oh my God, you hear me and you believe me, you
yes.
know, like it's so, so important, especially for your mental well-being, you know, having your doctor sit there and just listen, but also have time to listen.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Through this whole process, one of the biggest things that I have learned as a patient and also as a nurse is the value of listening and just taking time to listen to your patients and their families and realizing how much that means to them. Even if you really can't do anything about the situation and you can't really make it better at the time, yeah. doing that makes the world of difference, and it means almost just as much to them, the listening, as actually doing something to make the situation better. And it's something that I really value as a nurse. And also, I'm a nurse educator. I just graduated with my master's in nursing education last year. And so I'm teaching in an undergrad nursing program. And so I take students into the clinical setting, and I also teach in the simulation lab. And so I get a lot of experience interacting with students and kind of helping them navigate how to do patient care effectively, how to become an empowered nurse. And that is like one of the number one things that I talk to them about, is be an active listener for your patients and their families, because it will make a huge difference.
You are such a gift to those students.
Thank you.
And what a force of nature. I think that's part of what, you know, specifically makes nurses so unique in healthcare and so needed and valuable, is that, you know, we are the ones at the bedside the whole time. We are, you know, doing the initial history and physical, you know, we're doing the initial assessments. If they're in the hospital, we're in there, you know, 12 hours a day at the bedside, you know, either doing meds, doing assessments, doing vitals, just seeing how patients are doing. And we are the eyes and ears of the healthcare world.
Definitely.
And that's so important to impart on the next, you know, generations of nurses, and teaching them to be empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not saying they're, like you said, like you had a great doctor. I know a lot of really great docs that, you know, are trying to disrupt and change the systems, you know, where it's not, where like residents and stuff aren't just, you know, left to fend for themselves and learn, you know, mm-hmm. they're challenging systems to actually be authority figures that have empathy, you know, so that like the doctors are now being like taught more to like sit and listen and like make that space, which, you know, and it's different in every field. You know, you might have like hundreds of patients that you have to see, and you might not be able to devote, you know, that much time. But if you make the most of that time and you're able to sit there and empathize and listen and validate someone, you can do that in a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm. That is something that I just think is so powerful. And through all of my experiences, good and bad, I've definitely had a rough go with it for a good chunk of my life. But mm-hmm. honestly, my passion from nursing and my idea to become a nurse literally came to me when I was in the PICU recovering from my colon resection surgery. I was literally like day one post-op, and just the care that I was receiving from my nurses was so amazing. And I was like, maybe this is something that I would want to do with the rest of my life, like be able to give back and give patients the care that I have received on the patient end of things. Like, I think that that's what I want to do. And literally from that day forward, that was my new goal, was to go to nursing school and just kind of trudge along and use my experiences and use my story to help shape me into the nurse and the person that I am today. And even though I've gone through a lot of tough times, I honestly would not change it for the world, because it has made me the person that I am today and has made me the nurse that I am today. I value things like listening. I value validation. I really try to put myself, or I really can put myself in the patient's shoes a lot of the time, because I've literally been there. And so I feel like I'm able to have a different connection with my patients just because of my experiences, and also with the families, because watching my mom be on, and my parents and my sister and everyone be on the other side of things while I was the patient, in the moment, I felt like I didn't, not that I didn't appreciate it, but I didn't appreciate it in the right way. And now that I have gotten older and I've had to start advocating for myself, like as an adult patient, I realize how important my mom was in advocating for my care. And she sometimes was definitely known as like that mom. I know that nurses would talk about during report and be like, oh, buckle up, like this mom's a little crazy. And so I know that that's kind of how it was. And at the time, as a teenager, I was like kind of embarrassed sometimes when she would do the things that she would do while I was like in the hospital and things like that. But now that I look back on it, I'm like, I know exactly why she did that. She was just trying to advocate for me, and I'm her child. And she just feels like the control was completely taken away from her. And that's kind of how people respond to that sort of stress. And so I feel like as a nurse, I have really learned how to kind of take a step back and really resonate with the parents, especially in peds, because it's such an important part of pediatric nursing. I feel like I'm really able to relate to those parents and understand kind of when they're having tough days and they kind of lash out, that it's not them trying to make your life miserable, or it's not them trying to be a burden on you. It's just they, all the control has been taken away from them, and they don't know what else to do at that time. So I feel like just through all of my experiences, I've just been able to pick up different things and apply it to my nursing practice. And I am very thankful, honestly, for all of the things that I have been through, because I do feel like it's made me a stronger nurse, a stronger patient advocate, a stronger patient myself. And so I just think, again, huge believer in things happen for a reason. So I feel like that's kind of just how I see like my entire journey.
Girl, you can't see, but I have the biggest smile on my face just listening to you talk and listening to your passion.
Thank you.
So what's next for you? What are you trying to do now? You want to be like a patient advocate? You want to be like a bigger voice and try and help more people? How are you going to do that?
So, like I said, I just kind of started venturing into the world of nursing education, and I have been working a lot with undergrad students, and I feel like it's a completely different way to make a difference for patients and patient outcomes. And so I feel like I've really been able to kind of hone in on my own passions and kind of translate it into a different light in order to affect the next generation of nurses. And so I'm really passionate about getting involved more within the education system, within nursing and things like that, but also just trying to, at the time, because my platform is very new, just kind of learning how to build my platform to just reach as many people as I can. And I feel like I have experience in multiple different arenas when it comes to kind of the healthcare world. And so just trying to really reach out to many different groups and just kind of help inspire them and empower them to either advocate for themselves, advocate for their learning, advocate for their patients, and just trying to have as much of an outreach as I possibly can to help shape multiple different avenues of healthcare.
I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
I really, like, I'm here to help you, you know, in any way that I can. What platform and stuff can, you know, people reach out to you on?
So my new Instagram handle, which is kind of how I am starting to create this new platform, is @thepatientrn.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes, I feel like I was really excited about the name just because it kind of helps encompass so much of my story. I am very excited about that. And I feel like it just really represents me and represents kind of what I'm trying to do with my platform. So that is the main place that people can find me. You also can find me on Facebook, Mackenzie Kimes.
Well, lovely. I encourage you all to go and follow her. And if you have any questions or you feel like sharing your story, share it with both of us. I love these stories of, you know, being empowered to like join the healthcare field from like your own, I don't want to say misadventures in medicine, but like, you know, through like your own personal stories that have shaped you, whether that's life as a patient or, you know, advocating for someone else, like something that happened like close to you. Yeah. Bring on all the stories, bring on all the patient advocacy. Yes. Mackenzie, I feel like you're going to give like a big old TED talk one day that's going to go viral. And I'm putting that out into the universe right now.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
But I've really appreciated our conversation. So, you know, anytime you have anything coming up or a new topic or something that you want to discuss further, you know, you're always welcome here.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited that I was able to share my story. And like I said, the episode that you aired and that it just resonated with me so much, like share your story because you never know who will reach out to help you in your journey, but you also don't know who needs to hear it and who you can be that advocate for. And so, like you said, I just want to like welcome any and all stories. And I just really want to be that mentor, that empowerment for anyone who feels like they kind of fit in the realm of multiple different avenues of healthcare.
Perfect. I just have to say another big old thank you to Mackenzie for joining us on the WOMED today. I hope y'all loved her as much as I did. Patient advocacy is such important work. Also, just please keep pitching yourselves to the podcast. I love hearing your stories. I wish I could accommodate everybody, but I really love the enthusiasm and hearing from all of you. It just really warms my heart. So you can follow along with Kenzie on Instagram @thepatientrn. And please don't forget to follow along with the WOMED either. I just want you all to know that you are just super radiant, brilliant, badass humans. And I appreciate you. So till next week, WOMED out.